Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto of this chapter, text 1. Sri Raja Vacha,
Sri Raja Vacha,
Bhagavantam Harimprayo,
Bhagavantam Harimprayo,
Bhagjaya Adittama, Teshama Santa Kamana,
Teshama Santa Kamana,
Kanishka Vidhapana,
Kanishka Vidhapana.
Sri Raja Uvacha,
Sri Raja Uvacha,
King Nimi inquired,
Bhagavantam,
Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Arim,
Ari, Praya, for the most part, Nam,
never,
Bhajanti, who worship, Atma-vittama,
all of you
are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Tesham, of them, asanka,
unquenched,
kamana, material desires. Ka,
what?
Nishta,
destination.
Avijita,
who
are not able to control.
Atmana,
themselves. Translation, can you mean? Inquire. Further, my dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of God, Hari, nor are unable to quench their material desires, and who are not in control of their own selves. Purport of the chapter, the 11th canto, Shamasa Rishi describes an auspicious past of those who are unfavorable to the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. And the sage Karavajana explains the Yuga Yama avatars, the incarnations of the Lord who present the authorized process of religion for each different age. In the previous chapter, it was explained that although the demigods place obstacles in the path of the Lord's devotees, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the devotees are able to place their feet on the head of such obstacles and thus pass beyond them to the supreme destination. However, for the non-devotees, there is no such facility. As soon as the conditioned soul becomes indifferent to the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, he is immediately attracted by the temporary varieties of mankind and becomes a slave of inauspicious desires. Thus, the conditioned soul, devoid of devotion for the Lord, completely forgets the transcendental bliss of the spiritual world, which is enjoyed in five transcendental rasas. Although the devotees are not overcome by the sense gratification offered by the demigods, the demigods themselves become absorbed in material form, taste, and smell. Similarly, those who are non-devotees are also become bound by material form, taste, and other sense perceptions, such as the sensuous experience of sex life. Thus, they remain hovering in a dreamlike state, imagining different types of material sense gratification, and forget their eternal relationship with the Personality of Godhead. Videha Raj, meaning now inquires from Chamasa Muni about the goal attained by such bewildered persons. Translation community further inquired, my dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of God, Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires and who are not in control of their own selves. Well, this is a question, right? King Nimi, about the destination of those who do not worship the Supreme Lord. So, of course, more interesting for the devotee is the destination of those who are worshiping the Supreme Lord. So that is described as the prayojana. We have a process called bhakti, which is the abhidhyaya. And then we have to understand what the goal of that process is. So that's called the prayojana. And generally we say that is prema. So bhakti is the process and prema is the goal. Of course, prema is part of bhakti also. So in one sense, bhakti is the process or the sadhana, and bhakti is the goal. In Sanskrit, this is the expression is a little more relatable. One is called the sadhana, that is bhakti, and sadhya is the goal, prema. So sadhana and sadhya, obviously, you see they are related. Sadhana produces sadhya, that which is attained by the sadhana is called the sadhya. Bhakti and prema go together. They are actually both bhakti. The one is a perfect state of bhakti, that is prema. So the goal is actually non-different from the process. If we do bhakti, then we attain bhakti. Just that the bhakti is more pure or more perfect in prema. So that is the goal for those who practice bhakti. And bhakti is defined as worship of the Supreme Lord. Hari. So this is the main subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, the process of bhakti, and through that the attainment of prema. And that prema is described in the 10th canto. Usually we will say, well, we are doing bhakti, but it is very difficult for us to understand what prema is. In the Nectar Devotion, for instance, we have the first part of the eastern section that describes mainly the process of sadhana bhakti, and then there's a little bit on prema after that. And then the rest of the book is on prema, that is the southern section and western section and northern section. And then the devotees look at that, we can't touch that part. That's too difficult to understand. And so they study the first part in the Bhakti Shastri. So we have this theory of prema or something like that. But prema is the prayojana. It is one of the three subjects of Vedic literature. So it's also necessary to understand, because if we don't know what the goal is, how do we do the sadhana? How do you attain a goal if you don't know what it is? So if you do something but you don't know what the goal is, you don't attain it. Just like if you you think of Krishna when you die, you attain Krishna. And you think of Devatas when you die, you attain Devatas. And you think of Rakshasas when you die, you attain Rakshasas or whatever, or Pitras or whatever. So if your goal is Krishna, you attain Krishna. And if your goal is Pitras, you attain Pitras. If your goal is Manusha, you attain Manusha, human form, or whatever. In case of Bharata, you attain deer body, because you thought of deer. And if you don't think of anything, what do you attain? Something, maybe, nothing, whatever. Something very vague. So, if we don't know what the goal is, and we do bhakti, it's something like that. Yes, we do have credit because we're doing bhakti, so it leads in a certain direction, but we're not quite certain of what the goal is, then it's very difficult to attain that. We cannot mold our sadhana in the proper way. So therefore the goal, which is prema, is something we have to know, and therefore the scriptures deal with this subject matter as one of the portions of knowledge, one of the three parts, the subjects of the Vedas. But nevertheless, we do have another way of accessing that if we can't get into the Nectar of Devotion and read the other parts of it and understand what it means. At least, we can take it another way, and that is we can follow the descriptions of the devotees who have prema, and they are described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, because we have a very nice description of Krishna and the devotees in relation to Krishna and how they respond to Krishna. And these devotees are devotees of prema.
These are, in fact, not just prema. These are the devotees on the highest level of bhakti, highest level of prema. So as I explained the other day, there are so many levels from bhava all the way up to mahabhava. So all of these are described in the 10th canto. We may not, the names are not given, so we don't know, but we simply read the path signs of Krishna and his devotees, and then we'll understand something of the nature of these different types of prema. So that is the approach of the Bhagavatam, by describing the persons or the devotees who have that prema. Then we can understand something of the nature of that love. So that is one of the topics, one of the questions of the sages was, how do the people of Kali Yuga get saved? What is the best process for them? And the answer is, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, hear the pastimes of Krishna. By hearing the pastimes of Krishna, we understand what the goal is, because we understand what the highest devotees are. We understand prema. And we understand the process of bhakti. So, therefore, we do understand the goal from that. So, that is the main subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna and his devotees. And the devotees are acting within prema. So here we have an opposite question. What is the destination of those who don't worship the Supreme Lord, at least in general? They don't worship. What happens to them? So the main subject is what happens to the devotees who have prema, because the object of the devotees in studying Bhagavatam is to attain Krishna and the highest perfection. We're not so much interested in attaining the opposite. But nevertheless, we do see in the Bhagavatam an explanation of the opposite. Not only here, but we'll speak, for instance, in the fifth canto, there is a discussion of the, a description of the hellish planets. Where you go when you do your sinful activities. So 23 hells are described. And the lower planets in general, the Talatala and the Vitala, Sutala, etc., the Patala, they're all described in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So not only the high destination, but the opposite is also described. And similarly in the Bhagavad Gita, we will find not only the destination, the positive destination described, we find the negative is also described. So Krishna describes how the demons, those who are in tamas, asuras, they sink down and down and down into the lower species of life. And he describes the people in tamaguni and how they act in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So as well as it's positive, we also see the negative. So this is not a goal for the devotees, but it serves in another way to show the nature of the material world. So the devotees will never desire to participate in such material activities in the world. So in that way, these descriptions serve as an impetus to the devotee to attain the positive goal of prema rather than sink into tamaguna in the material world. So this is the question here, is what is the destination of those who cannot worship the Supreme Lord? And we obviously know they must stay in the material world. And when they stay in the material world, then they may be in sattva, raja, or tama, and accordingly to their activities, then they will attain similar future or worse future. Generally, the nature of the gunas is they keep changing. But if we get stuck in one particular guna, and we can attach to those activities, we can stay within that guna birth after birth. And on the other hand, we also know that generally the tendency of the gunas is to push you down. So if you're not careful, you will degrade. And therefore, we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that what does the mind do? It elevates you and it degrades you. And so if you're not careful, and this is what happens in most cases, we degrade. We go down, which means we sink in the gunas. Sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna. And people the opposite. You really have to put some endeavor into it. It's not automatic. therefore, to help the process, we have a varna ashram system. So you have to put some endeavor into following those rules. You follow the rules of the sudra, and eventually you can elevate yourself from tamagun to rajagun. And if you follow the rules for a kshatriya, then eventually you can elevate yourself to sattva. But you have to put some endeavor into that. If you simply wander around in the material world, generally there's a very great danger of sinking downwards very quickly and going into tamagun very quickly. And once you get in tamagun, then you sink further and further in tamagun. So this is the nature of living entities in the material world. So, we do have a system for at least maintaining your gunas and raising you up. That is the varnashram system. But the varnashram system is also limited, because it's dealing with gunas. And Krishna doesn't bother to be nistragali above Arjuna. Go above the gunas. So, that is why varnashram is also rejected. So in the beginning of Bhagavatam, this is called one of the cheating dharmas, and one of the Kaitava dharmas, which must be rejected. It's described also in Bhagavatam. Nevertheless, it's called a cheating dharma, even though it has a function of raising people from tamagun to rajagun to sattvagun. It's good. Still, it's cheating dharma. Why? Because if you only stick to this, you stay in the material world. At most, you'll stay in sattvagun. Later described here, even if you come to stuff, you're going to become a Brahmin, that's no guarantee that you can fall down again, even then. So, and we see examples of that. Ajamila was a Brahmin, fell down. So, no guarantee, even if you follow the Varnashram system, you're going to stay in Sattva-gun eternally. Now, of course, the goal of Sattva-gun, the goal of sattva-gun is to go beyond sattva-gun. So Krishna has a very special arrangement in this material world. Even though the gunas are binding, there is one feature of maya, which is, let's say, good. The other feature is bad. So the good feature is vidya, or knowledge. The bad feature is avidya, ignorance. So these two functions of mind are there, and most people participate in the avidya function. But if you come to sattva, then the vidya function becomes very prominent. One of the characteristics of sattva is prakash. Prakash means knowledge. So there's two qualities of sattva. One is prakash. So prakash is there. That means knowledge. Doesn't mean regular knowledge, like material knowledge, because even demons get that. So what it means knowledge that if we're not the body, spiritual knowledge, we can distinguish between atma and body. So this is sattvic knowledge. It's in sattva that we can get this type of knowledge. Therefore, the process of jnana is introduced as part of the varnashram system, to get that atma jnana. So sattva also, our jnana also is in sattva-gun. That's also mentioned in 11th canto. So the process of jnana yoga is not transcendental. Its goal is transcendental, but its process isn't. It's not like bhakti. Bhakti process and bhakti goal are the same. They're both bhakti. They're both nirguna, beyond the gunas. But jnana is sattva. The goal of sattva is mukti, which is nirguna. They're different. So the immediate question is, how can gunas get us beyond the gunas? How can jnana give us mukti if it's only sattva gun? It will bind us into sattva gun. It can't give you something higher. And the answer is yes, it can't. Ultimately, jnana on its own is useless. How does it get mukti then? So the answer is, because you have to also do a little bhakti with it. And it is that bhakti which will allow you to get the mukti, not the jnana. So if you only do jnana and you reject bhakti and you reject the Lord and say the Lord is maya, there's no liberation. you will get bound up in the Buddhas again. If you are Gyani and you do worship Vishnu or Krishna, fine, you have a little bhakti. So, when you perfect your Jnana, then the process is give up the Jnana because it's sattva and it's binding. So what's left? Only the bhakti. You don't give up the bhakti. So that bhakti allows you to get your liberation. Mercy of the Lord is there. Little mercy. Because little mercy, you only get hooked. You don't get anything beyond that. And that's your aspiration anyway. Yeah? So Jnana on its own is useless. It's only because of the bhakti that you attain the goal of mukti. And even if we look at the varnashram system, it's also useless. You cannot even elevate in that system and get the products of the system in karma yoga. You cannot get svarga-loka unless you worship the Lord. So bhakti also is necessary for karma yoga. So, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you know, you worship the demigods and you attain your goal. But you also have to worship Vishnu. If you don't worship Vishnu, you don't get, demigods aren't going to give you all these things. So you have to worship Vishnu also. That is why very cleverly the smartos, when they do the five types of worship, they include Vishnu there. Because if they don't, they don't get anything. And they must also worship Vishnu, even though it's not major worship, and therefore they're not Vaishnavas, they must accept. So in the Varnashram system and in Yajna, you must worship Vishnu as well as so many devatas. No. No result. No svarga-loka. So karma yoga also is dependent upon bhakti. If one offends Vishnu, no result. So karma yoga and jnana yoga are both ultimately dependent on bhakti to get the results. Bhakti is not dependent on any of these. In fact, it's better to do bhakti without these. If we do have other mixtures called mixed bhakti. So that's better. It's better than no bhakti, or it's better than karma yoga and jnana yoga. So karma yoga and jnana yoga without bhakti are useless. Karma yoga and jnana yoga with little bhakti, you can attain your goals. And if we do bhakti with a little karma or a little jnana, it's better. We get a better result. We go beyond liberation. But still, if we do bhakti without karma or jnana at all, that's even better. We get the highest. So that is why Nectar Devotion recommends pure bhakti. That is how you get real relationship with Krishna, bhakti rasa meva sindhu rasa, that is from pure bhakti. Do mixed bhakti, we don't get that. But we get more than liberation, so we have the spiritual world with a rather neutral relationship with spring water, that's all. Chandra rasa. And if we attain pure bhakti, then we get rasa, asya, satya, vatsalya, mandari, etc. So, therefore, bhakti is independent of these processes. Other processes are dependent. So that is the nature of these different processes. And if we don't follow any bona fide process, of course that's worse. We don't, nothing happens and then we can go down. So therefore the system is laid out very methodically in the Vedic literatures. Unfortunately, some people won't follow the proper process, and therefore they won't get the proper results. So Bhagavatam makes it very clear what the process is. So there's two ways we can progress. That is, we can go the gradual way and do karma yoga and worship the devatas and worship Vishnu and progress up to sattva gun. And when we get to sattva gun, then we're qualified to do jnana yoga. So we do jnana yoga and we study Vedanta sutras and we also have to worship Supreme Lord. Then we can get mukti and we can destroy all of our karmas. If we're fortunate at that time, two things can happen. We can go further. We can go to yoga, Ashtanga yoga. And then we do Ashtanga Yoga. If we do Ashtanga Yoga, then we also have to worship Paramatma. We have to meditate on Paramatma. So therefore, worship of Supreme Lord or Bhakti is also Anga of Ashtanga Yoga. But then the Ashtanga Yoga, yogi may also want to get mukti and personal liberation, despite the fact that he does worship Vishnu. And if he does worship Vishnu, he can. If both of these are fortunate, then they get association with devotees, then they can progress to bhakti after they become purified and whatever. If they get association with devotees, then they can take to bhakti. So they do bhakti, and then there's two ways. They can have mixed devotion. Due to their karma, they can have karma Mr. Bhakti. Or if they're jnani, they can have jnana Mr. Bhakti. Or if they're yogi, then yoga Mr. Bhakti. That fits better than the others, but still it's not the best thing. So by doing those things, at least they get into Vaikuntha. But if they're more fortunate and they give up those processes completely and they simply do bhakti, then they attain higher goal. They can actually develop a positive relationship with the Lord, and that's what bhakti is. That's all they can do. So therefore, the different types of bhakti are also important, and we should understand what the different types are. So this is how this is the positive aspect. And if we neglect all of this, then we can't we cannot attain anything. If we do not worship the Lord in the Varnashram system, what happens? We don't attain anything. We do jnana and we don't worship the Lord, no mukti. So it becomes a waste of time. Our endeavor for karma yoga or jnana yoga becomes useless. And if we're less fortunate, then we can not even stay in the same position. We can sink. We can go downwards. And of course, people who are not in the Varnashram system, this is more likely than ever. And they'll sink downwards. They'll go to lower and lower gunas. Not worshipping the Lord and not having any particular rules and regulations to follow them. Sink downwards. So the question asked here is, what is the goal of these people? So obviously it means they stay in the material world, and generally they're going to start sinking downwards. They're going to fall from wherever they are to a further position, lower position in the material world. And lower means they can go down lower in human species, from Sattva to Raja to Tama. And if they're less fortunate, then they can even sink in species. They can go in human species, animal species, to plant species. Or they can sink down there another way. They go from Earth planet down to the hellish planets, and Vitala and Sutala and all those planets. So there's different ways in which you can degrade yourself in this material world. So therefore, the destination of those who do not worship the Supreme Lord is definitely stay in the material world and suffer. That's the final conclusion for that. So there's varieties in the material world, and therefore in the fifth canto is described, we have Brahmaloka on the top, Patalaloka on the bottom, and we have all these different levels in between. And even on the earth plane, on the Bhulmandala, then we have all sorts of divisions, and Varshas in one division, then we have the other Varshas in Jambudvipa, then we have other Vipas up there also. So even on our level, Bhu level, then there's all sorts of different levels. And we can't even go to the other places because they are called heavenly spheres. People who fall from the heavenly planets end up on these other Varshas, and we can't even go there. So there are innumerable places for the Jivas to rise and fall in the material world with various types of enjoyment. And we're in one little section. And in our little section called Bhairavarsha, then we do have, even there, we have so many varieties of people and places and countries and whatever, and levels. Tamasattva, Raja, mixture in different ways. So, if we don't worship the Lord, then we wander around in here. And usually, if we don't worship the Lord, we're going to sink downwards into lower species and our lower positions in Bhumandala or lower lokas or whatever. Or lower species. That's what's going to happen. No? So all of that was described as part of the fifth canto, as describing the various facilities given to living entities in the material world after Brahma makes the creation, all the different lokas and all the different bodies for the living entities. These are the destinations for people that don't worship the Lord. And if one worships the Lord a little bit, that is very positive, even if it's a little bit. And if we mix that with Varnash and Organa, then we get positive results again. We can go upwards. And if we don't worship the Lord a little, then the possibility is there, we can increase that. And that becomes bhakti. And if one does bhakti, then we actually are on the way out of the material world. Because with Shraddha, we get to see the bhakti. Bhakti lakta grows, and eventually we end up in the spiritual world. That little bit of Shraddha or pure bhakti, if we get that, that is the good portion for the jiva. Otherwise, we wander in the material world, as Lord Chaitanya says. We simply wander throughout the material world from top to bottom. Worship of the Lord is necessary. Even for the secondary process of karma jnana and bhakti, it is necessary to get right results. But these are not final processes. And eventually they must lead to devotion or direct worship of the Lord as the major process. And then we actually get the results that are desired, and which is the main subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. From this main bhakti, then we can get prema, and we attain Krishna, who is described in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Okay, any question?
We say that we have to follow the devotees who have a spontaneous love for Krishna. So what does this follow?
Who says?
Like Raghunuga Bhakti and all that,
yeah.
Who advance to get that praise.
Yeah.
So what does this following mean? We have to do what they are doing, or you know, we have to take instructions from them, or what does it really mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, Raghunuga means literally following Radha. Anuga means to follow after. And Radha there refers to Raghatmaka bhaktas. Raghatma bhaktas are Nityasiddha bhaktas in the spiritual world. So we must follow after them. So how do we follow after the Raghatmaka bhaktas? So Raghatmaka bhaktas actually refers only to those inhabitants, Nityasiddha inhabitants of Vrindavan in the spiritual world, not to Vaikuntha or anywhere else. So in other words, Raghunuga is especially for attaining Krishna in Vrindavan, not in Dwarka, not in Mathura. We have to, that Raga is the special quality of the Vrajavasis only, not of the Dwarka Vasis or the Mathura Vasis. So we follow after those devotees in Vrindavan, which they can be gopis or Madhya Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj or Subala or Sridhama or any of the friends or any of the servants like Rajaka, etc. So following after is described in the Nectar of Devotion there in the first part of the Eastern section. It's described that following after means we absorb ourselves in the mood, that particular mood, and those types of services. And following after does not mean one becomes those persons, identified with them and becomes that particular person. So you cannot become Mother Yasoda. She's an Nityasiddha, so you cannot become her because she has a eternal position, but you can follow after her and serve her and develop a similar type of devotion or admiration for that type of devotion and aspire for a similar type of devotion. And therefore one can do similar types of service to Krishna and think of Krishna in the same way. So Mother Yasoda thinks of Krishna as a small child who is helpless, and she has to care for him all the time. So then she has certain rasas and certain services she does. Dresses Krishna, bathes Krishna, cooks for Krishna, worries about Krishna all the time when he's in the forest playing with the cowherd boys, and puts him to bed at night. And that's how she has particular services, and she has a particular mood, which is vasala rasa, which has got also a tinge of karuna-rasa, a feeling of Krishna being very helpless. One becomes absorbed in those particular moods, and then one performs service to Krishna, following that. So that is what following after means, to aspire for a similar type of service without identifying completely with the person.
Aren't you discussing the smartest they worship the five kinds of personalities? Were you talking about country pastime?
Yeah.
So then in the sixth canto, Srila Prabhupada mentions that that's an imagined form of Vishnu. You were saying that they include Vishnu.
Yeah.
So it gives us some validity. And from what I understand, that's a system that was created by some Acharya.
Oh, yeah. Let's discard that then, but. In the yogis, for instance, they must worship Vishnu and whatever. So in general, in Karma Kanda, they cannot reject Vishnu, but they have to accept him alone, even though they must worship, you know, some of the other devatas and their sacrifices or whatever. We find again, even the Maivatis may also worship Vishnu. But the problem with that, because when you worship Vishnu, but you think, oh, he's actually got a material body, then it's aparad. So if it's aparad, then it's useless also. So it's not really worship of Vishnu. That's not real worship of Vishnu. And so we do have to accept his position, and we have to accept that he's got a spiritual body, acceptance, and we worship. If there's no aparad, then the system works. So therefore, the Maya body, even if they worship Vishnu, no effect. They do not get liberation. I think probably nowadays the smartas are influenced by the Mayavadis. Now, smarta originally means simply one who follows the Smriti Shastras. So it's not necessarily a Mayavadi, because Mayavadi philosophy only came into existence with Shankaracharya. Yeah? So if other persons are not, they're smarter, so to speak, following Smriti but not Shankaracharya, then they may not follow into that same aparana type of mentality.
So, when Srila Prabhupada says it's an imagined form.
So, whether he invented that system or not, I don't know about that.
So, when Prabhupada says it's an imagined form of Vishnu, is that because their concept is a temporary form?
Probably, yes. Because most of the smarts nowadays are the Mayavadis.
Thank you very much. Can you explain how you two degrade through the various planets or the end of the city?
How? Instead of, why would we go to the lower planet instead of having a tree on earth or a cow on earth or a monkey on earth, and that we go to a lower planetary system? It's not really described in detail, but I think it has to do with one's aspirations. Becoming an animal or a plant, because nobody aspires to be an animal or a plant, at least consciously, I don't think. Maybe some people do. They like, I'd like to be a horse, or I'd like to be a cat. Some people are, I'd like to be a dog. Some people may aspire like that in the modern age. Most people don't consciously do that. But by your activities, if you do very sinful activities, then you open your chances of going down to that region into animal or plant species. If you want to go to the lower planetary systems, that is, in one sense, they're described as Vila Svarga, which means Svarga in a hole, literally, or subterranean heavenly planets, because they're very enjoyable. And you've got human-like bodies, so you can have the same kind of enjoyment like a human being. But there's like certain restrictions, like there's no sunlight, and it's full of earth, and it's in like a caves and holes and things like that. But you have a long lifespan, and you get a lot of sense enjoyment. So you would have to have some sort of qualification there for getting there rather than becoming an animal. So we can say it's superior in one sense to animal plant existence, because you've got human-like bodies, and demonic bodies, of course, but a human-like. And you have a high sense enjoyment. If one has great aspirations for enjoyment, At the same time, one does follow some sort of rules, and then one could be qualified for going there. In other words, one doesn't, not simply a person who is like a drug addict or something and commits all sorts of crimes and is in the most chaotic state. Those type of people get completely irresponsible and they end up in plant species or lower animal, and the people who are in the lower planetary systems, they would superficially follow some rules, like Varnashram, like we find the demons like Ravana follow some worship and whatever, and Bali Maharaj is doing that also, doing a lot of sacrifices. Of course, he was a devotee, but other demons also, they follow something. Duryodhana was very dharma in many ways, even though he's a demon. Followed dharma in many ways, but of course, he didn't worship the Supreme Lord. That's the main problem. But if you don't worship the Supreme Lord, the whole system's useless. You can go downwards. So possibly these persons are following some sort of dharma, but at the same time, they don't worship the Lord. And they do something collectively also, so they end up in the Bila Sarga. It's not described in detail, of course, but I would assume that's what it means.
Just about the process of Kami Yoga, it's dependent on Bhakti, that's worshipping the deities and the jagas. And you said through process of yoga that while worshipping Paramatma, that is the Bhakti element.
Yeah.
I missed the Bhakti element in the Jnana.
Well, yeah, and in Jnana also, they must also worship Vishnu. It's not called bhakti, even though they do, because it's a very small portion, and their main object is Jnana and liberation rather than worship of the Lord, but included in there is the worship of Vishnu also. And if we don't do that, then...
What is the process? Because in Karma, then it's Jagya and so forth.
Yeah.
Within Yoga, then it's Paramatma meditation.
Or deity worship.
Yeah.
We will see even in the like the Shankaracharyas and the Shankaracharya himself has prayers to Krishna, prayers to Durga, and prayers here and whatever. You know, he has all sorts of prayers to devas and to Krishna and Vishnu as well. But of course, the problem with the Mayavada conception ultimately to say these things are useful, but they're also material. So because of that type of worship, it's aparad. So that, if you offend the Lord, then you fall. Those who do not actually worship the Lord properly and offend the Lord, then they will not actually attain mukti. They're mukta mani na. They think they're liberated, but they fall from that position. So a real jnani who does not offend the Lord and does worship, but he's interested in moksha, then he's allowed to get moksha when he gets perfection. So we see some like that. Sukadeva Goswami was in the womb and he was Atma Ram, he was Atma again. He didn't want to associate with anything in the material world. He was completely peaceful, whatever, like that. Later he became, by the inspiration of Vyasadeva and Krishna, and became a great devotee. But originally he was Atma again. He did not stay in the material world like liberation. But he wasn't offended, he didn't offend the Lord in any way. He accepted the Lord. He listened to the Lord also.
So the process of the jnana and the yoga is similar?
Huh?
The process?
Jnana and yoga. The difference between jnana and yoga is that jnana is a very intellectual process of study.
So that's what I'm trying to work out. What's the bhakti element within?
Yeah, so then they must also worship the Lord and have a deity and worship Vishnu as well as the devatas. And they may also do some little meditation. Yoga, what is it? They don't. Vedanta, they're not interested in studying that at all. That's not the main process. They may refer to scriptures, but mainly they're interested in asanas, jnana, into the whole process of asana. And then they meditate on Vishnu. So in jnana, they also worship Vishnu either by meditation or by worship, but it's also secondary to their main study of Vedanta.
So you have
to mourn and do your duty. Yeah. My duty, I worship the Lord and whatever. Now we go and study the Vedanta and try to figure out the difference between Atma and body.
So we worship. We do
that
puja
and then we do bhakti. Yeah, our puja is our bhakti also. So it's not, we name these processes simply because of, let's say, proportion, say just a little bit, of bhakti, then we call it something else, karma yoga or jnana yoga. And if it's mostly bhakti, then we call it bhakti. And if it's pure bhakti, it's not pure bhakti, and if it's mostly bhakti, it's something else, we call it mixed bhakti. And if it's karma yoga without jnana, we shouldn't even call it karma yoga, and jnana yoga is not the proper system. I would say it's a sort of or something. This is what Vishwanath Chakrabarty says to mixed devotees. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, where it talks about the Arjuna, Arjuna, Yamcha, the person who is suffering, the person who wants some enjoyment of money, the person who is Jigasu, and the person who is again. So, but he says that the mixed devotees are also devotees, and Krishna accepts them, says they are all my devotees, and of them the Gyan is the best. Right? So they must get better than the Gyanis and the Yogis, who, if they have a little bhakti, get liberation. So the mixed bhaktis must get something better than liberation. But at the same time, they cannot get the same result as the pure devotees who do the Suda bhakti without any mixture. So we definitely know the Suda bhaktis get relationship like Dasa Sakya, that's all they're doing. They end up in spiritual world and spiritual body, and they serve the Lord directly. So, if we must get more than mukti, we must have some sort of positive relationship with the Lord by mixed bhakti. It must be in the spiritual world, but it cannot be the direct relationship like Sakya Dasa, etc. So, therefore, he says that the Gyan and Bhakta ends up with a Shanta Rasa with the Lord. So, Shanta Rasa is a relationship. But it's also a very weak relationship in which one doesn't really serve the Lord. And they see the Lord, and one experiences, this is blissful. But that strong desire to worship the Lord and serve the Lord at all times is not there. So they get some sort of bliss, and they may see the Lord. The karma mixed bhaktas don't even see the Lord there. Well, of course they're not mixed there. They have, there's no movement there in the spiritual world. But because of the influence, the result they get is they're in the spiritual world, they have a spiritual body, they can get, Sarupya, Salokya, Sarsi, all these things. And they have that little bit of tinge for getting material benefits. So they get all these wonderful things, they get a nice palace, they get a nice body, nice facilities. And they also think of the Lord, but they don't meet the Lord. So they're a little bit further even than the Ganesh or Bhaktis. But they also have some, we don't call it prema, but they have some sort of mild bliss, and they're very happy there, meditating on the Lord. So then they don't have any material desires there. But then they did bhakti, so the Lord rewards them for that, and they end up in a pure state. But because their desires were a little bit tinged, according to your desires, you get the results, so therefore. Now, of course, if they meet a pure devotee who's a pure bhakti, or somehow they end up with pure bhakti in the process of doing the mixed bhakti, fine. Then they're in the process of pure bhakti after that, and when they attain perfection, then they and they have dasa sakya, etc. So, by the mercy of the devotee. But if it happens that they don't, then they stick to that kind of mixed type of bhakti throughout the process. The Lord is merciful, so he takes them to the spiritual world, and they end up with something less.